And now, with Sound Investing, here's Paul Merriman.
I expect that this is going to be the shortest podcast I have ever recorded, and I also think that it may be one of the most important. Before I tell you why, I would like to start with a little history of our firm, the Merriman Wealth Management Company. Back in 1983, I had come out of an industry where from 1966, when I started as a broker, until 1982, the market basically had gone nowhere. As a matter of fact, the compound rate of return over that period of time was 6.3%. And after inflation, it was actually a loss of 1%. And so when I started the Merriman Investment Management Company, I was focused on using a strategy that I had learned over many years of systematic market timing. Not because I thought that it was going to beat the market, particularly in the good times, but because it would hopefully protect people against the major declines that had happened between 66 and 1982. In fact, very few people made money over that period of time. And during the period of time from 75 till 82, the public was in net redemption of equity holdings because of the terrible markets they had lived through, and they were just waiting to get out and break even, and not make money, but just break even. So that's what I started our firm with, a strategy that required active management, something that most people would not do on their own. And in 1993, after being in business for 10 years, and I think we had $200 or $300 million under management at that point. But my son, who was in business with me, came to me and said that we have a lot of clients who, while they're not opposed to using market timing for part of their portfolio, they are interested in having us look at doing the buy and hold portion of their portfolio. He also talked glowingly about the work of dimensional funds and all of the academic research that had been done behind the strategies that they were using. And in fact, the dimensional small cap value fund had just come out. And so while they had a great track record on paper, looking at the small cap value as an index going all the way back to 1928, they had no real time track record. But I must say that after going through some very difficult negotiations for our firm to be able to represent them, they said yes, and I went to their three-day workshop that I will tell you was probably some of the best 3 days of my life. It was fascinating. It was all about the research that had been done and how they were managing the funds, different from the way that that regular index funds were managed. It was very, very exciting. And by the way, they were very careful to point out that while there had been this big premium for small cap value, that while they believed it would do better than the large cap blend, the S&P 500 more specifically, but they couldn't say how big that premium would be. It's interesting today to look back and see that if you invested in that fund and it came out to the market in, I believe, first quarter of 1993 and held it through until today, a $10,000 investment in the Vanguard S&P 500 fund has grown to $185,000 and the small cap value DFA at $268,000. So it has been a premium. The premium was not as big as historical data had indicated. But of course, the academics were careful to explain that that is something that they would not be able to control. And of course, that's true of any manager, any strategy. So we added DFA. And the reason that we added DFA as a way to invest for people who were going to want to be a buy and hold investor is because it offered everything for the investor that we felt was in their best interests. It offered a form of passive investing that was, from our view, based on history, a better way to manage an index than what Vanguard was doing, and more tax efficient. And I mean, there were a lot of things about it that made the DFA product better. But what I think we probably felt strongly about is the people behind every step of what they were doing were folks that came out of the academic community. And all of this information had been tested. And of course, having been around Wall Street, where things that have a five-year track record were viewed as being something special, here were people that believed it took a 50-year track record to identify something special. So we had a strong feeling of trust in that organization and the work that they were doing, and a firm belief that they were going to continue to work to make the outcome better. And I believe they've lived up to all of that. Now, I say all of this about DFA because at the end of the day, whether it's John Bogle or the people, the academics, Dr. Fama, Dr. French, and Dr. Miller, there are a whole bunch of people who were involved in the building of DFA. Whenever we can have that feeling of trust about the people who are behind a strategy that is then going to be all of course, based on that unknown future, that's a big decision, who you trust. And there are a lot of people, I believe, who do trust that we are doing our best to try to help them put together portfolios that will make their financial future better. But I think it's important, and maybe even almost more important, to understand how DFA and this kind of investing, the factor investing with passive management and all that's behind the value and the small cap, et cetera, I think it's important that you understand that part of the story. And fortunately, there is a brand new documentary out that the title of that documentary is Turn Off the Noise. Of course, that's a request to be a disciplined buy and hold investor that ignores the noise of short-term performance, ignores the noise of predictions for the future, but positions investing for a lifetime. Now, when I say a lifetime, I'm assuming there's a glide path to that, some combination of equities and fixed income that may change over time, but basically a strategy that stays the course. But this documentary, Turn Off the Noise, is the story behind the group of people, mostly out of the University of Chicago, who became what Dimensional Funds is today. And by the way, as far as I'm concerned, when I look at the work of DFA or the Avantis funds, it is the same kind of academic research that has led to the way both of these organizations manage their portfolios. So in the note field to this podcast, you will see a link. And by the way, there is also a password that will get you access at no cost to this documentary. I think it is terrific. I sent it to Chris Pedersen and Daryl Balls. And both Daryl and Chris came back with the same feeling that I did. In the case of Daryl, his comment was simply spectacular. One word, spectacular. In the case of Chris Pedersen, his comment was, I just thought it was so appropriate. He said, "We stand on tall shoulders." And that is true. The work that we are doing is simply based on the amazing work that these academics have done. They did the heavy lifting. Our job has been to focus on ways to put these equity asset classes together to give you the best shot for the future. And so I agree with both Daryl and Chris. Now, there's more. And I really, after you watch the documentary, I really hope that you will also open the podcast video, YouTube piece that was done by Ben Felix and Cameron Passmore, two, I think, of the finest podcasters and teachers. Ben Felix, if you haven't seen his YouTube pieces on all the important aspects of investing, boy, I hope you go check them out. But in this particular case, they interviewed for over an hour Errol Morris. I didn't know Errol Morris, but Errol Morris is the man who produced and directed and put together this documentary. And what I found fascinating in that interview is that he came into this project knowing nothing about indexing, nothing about the kind of work that the people at DFA had are doing or did develop over the decades. So his was kind of the fresh view that I got back in 1994 when I went through their multi-day class. And I think his comments add a lot to the documentary because you see it through the eyes of kind of a normal investor and somebody who also, at the end of the day, believed as I do and Chris and Daryl do, that these are people to be trusted. And again, I just want to mention, this is not a sales pitch for DFA. It is not a sales pitch for Avantis. But those of us who need to put money away for the long term and want to do it on a passive basis, I think this is one of the finest ways to do it. Am I anti-Vanguard? Not for a second. I'm a great believer in Vanguard. But I just want you to get a feeling for the extra steps that the people at DFA and Avantis put into the process. And the favor you can do for me is whether you watch only the documentary or you watch also, because I really recommend you watch the documentary first, but you also watch the interview with Ben and Cameron. I hope that you will drop me a note and tell me whether this gave you a greater sense of trust and maybe would be that, you know, that magic part of the process that would keep you in it over a lifetime. I'm 80. My lifetime is very short for people who are thinking in terms of the next 30, 40, 50 years. But that's what we've got to get in our head, is how do we do this that we can actually invest in a way that we don't have to monkey with it once we get ourselves settled into a lifetime strategy. And I think you'll also come to the conclusion, I certainly did, that not only are we standing on tall shoulders, but John Bogle was standing on tall shoulders, because he was obviously very important in this process in that he brought the product to the public. But you will see a lot of what came ahead of Bogle's getting involved. So I hope it's as meaningful to you as it was to me. Hope to hear from you, and we'll be back with a regular length podcast next week. Thank you for joining us.
That was Paul Merriman with Sound Investing. Sound Investing, soundinvesting.com, and paulmerriman.com are produced and exclusively owned by Paul Merriman, who is solely responsible for their content. For more information, free articles, mutual fund recommendations, and more, visit paulmerriman.com.